Hi there. I'm very pleased to introduce you to someone who I have great admiration for and a woman of great wisdom. Her name is Hiro Boga. And Hiro is a business advisor, a mentor to people, a writer, and an energy alchemist. I believe that's what you said, Hiro. And I greatly admire her wisdom. She has a lot to share and she's very generous with sharing it. So, Hiro, welcome.
Thank you, Heather. I'm so happy to be here with you today.
There's a really lovely circle of women that have gathered around this course, and they're taking some really deep dives into what it means to live and lead out of their wild, most authentic, most passionate hearts. And so I wonder if you can start by telling us a bit about yourself. Tell us about your work and your play in the world.
Gosh, this is where I get completely tongue-tied. I have no idea what to say. My life and my work are not really separate from each other and never have been. I've been fortunate in, you know, the 63 years that I've been alive, for most of my adult life to do the work of my soul. Mm-hmm. And to make a living at it, and to be able to express and experience and share everything that that I can participate in, that my soul calls me to. So I am a writer. I mentor creative entrepreneurs in creating soul-centered businesses. Because to me, the life of the soul is the life that's lived every day. It is not, I don't think of the soul as being something separate from day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. It is very much, for me, a spirituality of incarnation. Mm-hmm. So how we live shapes the world around us. It shapes our own lives. And how I live contributes to that. I trust in the choices that I make, in the work that I do, in the people that I am in relationship with, and the world that I'm in relationship with. I'm 63 this year, and I have two grown sons, a brand new granddaughter who is reminding me all over again what this journey of incarnation is all about. And I'm a poet. I'm a novelist. I do many, many things. I have many different interests, and I can't imagine leaving any of them out of any aspect of my life. So they filter into my work, they filter into my relationships, they filter into everything that I do.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I think you've touched on some of the things that I really am drawn to in your work. One is that, like you, I'm drawn to many things and like to explore them and like to embrace them and not feel like I have to have a singular focus. And I think many of the people in this particular course feel the same way. The other thing that I'm really drawn to is the way that you talk about and you articulate so beautifully bringing soul into your work and really being very integrated. And that's, I think, really at the heart of what this course is all about. It's called Lead With Your Wild Heart. And so it really is about learning to trust that wild heart and follow that. So can you tell me a little bit about your own journey to learning to trust that your business could be built out of a place of soul, and it didn't have to be something separate or disjointed from your deepest heart?
Well, you know, I grew up, I was born and raised in India. Mm-hmm. And grew up there kind of in the 50s and early 60s. So it was a very low technology culture. And when you talk about wild, to me, there is the wild that exists in and of itself, the wild of the natural world, the wild of untamed things, but there's also the wildness that is internal to us. And there's a wonderful poem by Wendell Berry where he talks about, and I'm paraphrasing here because I can't remember the exact words, but wild is anything that follows no purpose except its own. So I think for me, ever since I can remember, I always knew that I had my own purpose, that my soul was here in this incarnation for its own purposes, and that whatever the agendas and beliefs and purposes of the people around me were, they did not have anything to do with me, or they had very little to do with me. I knew this as a really young child, and I was fortunate in that my dad was, I think, a kindred spirit, and really understood very early on that the best way that he could contribute to my growth and my life on this earth was to let me be myself.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. So I was quite a strange child, and I was drawn to wildness in all its forms. We had a place up in the mountains outside of Bombay where I lived, and Bombay was a huge city even then. I mean, it wasn't anything like it is now, but, you know, it was a city of maybe 8 or 9 million people. Mm-hmm. But every weekend and for all of our holidays, we would go off to this place in the mountains, which was tiny and truly wild. It was jungles everywhere. And because where we went, my aunt had a boarding school, she was busy with her stuff, and the school had its own life going on. I was left alone, and I wandered. I wandered up and down mountains and found incredible, hidden waterfalls and hidden valleys and panthers. And I felt completely at home in that ecology. I just knew myself as part of that. This is where I belonged.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't always feel that sense of belonging with family, but I certainly felt it out in the natural world. And I was really blessed to have had such an intimate relationship with it during those formative years of my life. So that has shaped so much of my sense of my own destiny, of my own pathways. And even though they're not pathways in the sense that I can see, you know, from here to eternity, that I can see exactly where I'm going and how I'm going to get there at all.
Right.
But I have always known that my soul had pathways laid out, some of which, you know, there are often multiple ways in which our soul's purposes can be expressed, in which they can unfold. So they're not prescriptive. It's not, you know, this is your fate and this is how you are fated to arrive at it. It's more this sense of, yeah, if I tune in, I can feel the hum of these underground tributaries that flow through my life and out through the world, and I can choose which one I follow, but in some ways there are no wrong choices. You know, so it gives me, as long as they're my choices, it gives me an enormous sense of freedom that I've always had in the midst of what could be often a very constricting culture. You know, it's a very traditional culture that I grew up in. So, for me, entrepreneurship was just a natural extension of that. It's like the more that I explored my place in the world, the more I realized that to be truly creative and in creative engagement with all the dimensions, including the subtle energy dimensions, that are part of our whole ecology, that I needed to be able to do my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't ever going to be a job that somebody else created that would give me that capacity and that fluidity and that freedom to create. So I started very early on, and, you know, I've been teaching now for maybe 35 years and doing the work that I do, and just loving it. And for me, it's always an ongoing engagement, both with the life of the world through through my engagement with clients and students, and also with the life of the universe, with devas, with subtle energy beings who hold patterns that they cannot bring into the world without cooperation with something that is off the world. So it's this incredible journey of creative adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And because I am an explorer and an adventurer by nature, for me it's just such a joy, such a delight, and so much fun to be able to do this. And, you know, fundamentally, if your basic needs for livelihood, for shelter, food, clothing, security, stability, if those needs are not met, it's very difficult to live the life of the soul.
Right.
Because your life is all tied up in sheer survival. And having grown up in India, I mean, I saw enough of that. You know?
Right. Yeah.
So part of why I'm so in love with what I do is because once people discover that they truly have agency in creating the kind of financial structure that will support them through their business, and then collaborating with the deva of their business to bring the qualities of soul that they are here to express in the world in a powerful, impactful way, they discover the sources of their own freedom.
Right.
It's very thrilling.
Yeah, you articulate it just so beautifully. And as I sit here, I feel like this, you've just sort of given me a glass of cold water or something on a hot day. It really, listening to your voice and hearing you speak, I think what you do is you speak permission into people's lives, and that's a powerful thing. And even as I think about the women that will be listening to this, I think they're longing to give themselves permission to be that explorer that you're talking about. And so can you tell me more about how do you, in your own personal growth and learning to trust yourself, how do you encourage other women to learn to trust that journey and to trust themselves to be an explorer, and that that's okay, and that they don't have to find a specific path, and, you know, and like you say, they're not making mistakes, they're in to trust it as a process of exploration instead of I have to find this path and I have to stick to it kind of mindset.
Well, part of it is making that commitment, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we each, in one way or another, either we choose consciously or we choose by default through our conditioning and our programming what is central to our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the central organizing principle of my life is wholeness. And wholeness requires embracing every part of me. So yes, there is the part of me that approaches the world with that spirit of exploration and curiosity. But it is grounded in the parts of me that need stability and security and anchoring and connection in order to have that freedom to explore. So it's always holding those seemingly contradictory aspects of ourselves in a singular embrace. You know, that when you do that, you create the conditions within which all of your soul's qualities can emerge and develop and express themselves. And curiosity and exploration are aspects of our souls. They're not separate from us. They are not qualities that we sort of take from outside and consume. They are already within us as seeds or potentials. So, you know, one of the things I say often to my clients and my students when they go, well, I don't know, is if you are in a situation where you're faced with a choice, you know, the simplest question you can ask yourself is, what would I do, what would I choose if I trusted myself?
Right.
If I trusted myself, what would I choose? And there's always a place within you where you know what is true for you. There's always a place within you where you know what your deep, true desire is.
Mm-hmm.
It may be overlaid by all kinds of voices that say, well, this isn't rational and this isn't reasonable and who do you think you are and blah, 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 blah. So part of what I do, part of why energy alchemy is really helpful and, you know, part of why I teach what I teach is because you have to have some skills with which to kind of clear all that clouds yourself, all that you know, that fogs your own inner knowing,
mm-hmm.
which is really all that intuition is.
Right.
And once you get that out of the way, then you are naturally an explorer. It is
uh-huh.
naturally a part of you. And you also naturally know that, you know, when it's time to fly out to the horizon and when it's time to return home and be in your nest. Like you know what those rhythms are because part of what we, you know, I think one of the central paradoxes of our being that we all have to negotiate on a daily basis is that we are both boundaried and boundless.
Right.
And if we only if we only follow our boundless selves, we get really ungrounded and scattered and accomplish not a whole lot. We may be very inspired and inspiring, but nothing much happens.
Mm-hmm.
And if we only hold on to our boundaried selves and ignore our boundless selves, life can collapse in on us really easily. It can become very narrow and rigid. So some of it, learning to trust yourself, is really understanding what the nature of incarnation is. So what's this journey that we're on? What is the soul? You know, it is not something out there in the sky. It is embodied in your incarnation. You know, it's an ongoing process of incarnation.
Mm-hmm.
But every time you take a risk, every time you do something new, every time you expand your vision, your sense of who you are incarnating another aspect of yourself. And also, every time you act, you know, every time you choose a path and you act to create something, you are incarnating aspects of yourself. So really that is the soul's journey, is this journey of ongoing incarnation. And the more that you choose that as the center of your life, the more you begin to trust yourself, because trust is also a quality of soul, but trust also develops through experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So the first time you do something, I'll tell you a story. I just got a new car. And it's one of, you know, the car I had before was really basic. It ran beautifully. I loved it because it was so reliable. But it had very simple functioning. This one does everything but wipe your nose for you. The first week that I had it, I didn't want to drive because it was too many things to try and keep track of. So I decided, okay, well, I'm going to create a container for developing a relationship with this car. And part of my container was that every day I would go out for a drive, and it would be a pleasure drive. It would not be to run errands. It would not be because I had to do something. It would be something that was like a date between me and my car. And that each trip, I would get to know one thing about the car, so that I wasn't going to be overwhelmed by trying to figure out how the navigation system works and how, if I push this on the touch screen, you know, suddenly something blares out of the speakers that I hadn't expected or whatever.
Okay.
So I did that, and as I did that, I started to get comfortable with it, and then I began to trust both myself and the car.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this may sound ridiculous, mm-hmm. but honestly, this is how we develop trust, is just by doing things, by practicing and
right.
seeing what happens and approaching it without big agendas, because big agendas tend to create so much fear that there's no room to relax into relationship, and without relaxing into relationship, there's no trust,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So be in relationship with yourself, romance yourself, get to know what you love, give yourself exactly what you want in whatever ways you can. They may be really small ways, but if you truly make that itself your practice, your soul practice, for a while, you'll develop trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You develop trust also by having integrity, by doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You develop trust by being trustworthy.
Right, right.
You develop trust in your intuition by acting on your intuition and recognizing when, you know, when something doesn't work out, that there is a larger plan. There is something that is not visible to you yet.
Mm-hmm. So what about discernment? How do you learn to discern? I mean, it can be tricky business, because it feels sometimes like there are multiple voices speaking into our lives. And as we're learning to trust, we're trying to figure out, okay, which one am I supposed to trust? The one that's, you know, the one that's making this seem like a dangerous situation and is trying to protect me from the situation, or the one that, you know, wants to run headlong into it. And how do you learn to discern that in intuition and what to put your trust into?
Yeah. Well, discernment is very much about boundaries. And our incarnate lives are about boundaries. So our soul is boundless,
mm-hmm.
but the soul, the boundless soul, cannot play in this world without a boundary itself.
Right.
So in essence, discernment is about boundaries. It's first of all learning to recognize what is you and what is not you,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the really basic level. And this, while it sounds simple, is not, because, you know, you start out being really just yourself, but very quickly after birth, or sometimes before birth, you are being shaped and conditioned by everything around you. And because when we are very young, our boundaries are extremely porous, we soak in our mothers, our fathers, our primary caregivers, and we don't recognize energetically that what we think is part of ourselves is actually not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you may be carrying your ancestral history of abuse or rape or fear or delight or, you know, prosperity, whatever it is. But it isn't actually yours. And until you clear out what is not yours, you can't know what is yours. But once you are able to do that, those are skills that you can learn. That's part of energy alchemy. Those are skills that you can learn. You learn to recognize what your own energy feels like and your own presence feels like. And when you do that, then discernment is a quality of soul. It is a quality of your own presence. And it's just naturally there. You know, it includes you still do your due diligence when you're making decisions about things. You still, you know, check out the external stuff. But once you know what's yours and what's not, it becomes much easier to deal with those conflicting voices that you're talking about. Because you can't do anything with your Aunt Mame's voice that says, you know, head for the hills, here we go. Yeehaw. But you can do something about that part of you, because we are not singular selves. We have within us every self that we've ever been and every self that we'll ever be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And some of those selves are much younger. Some of them are much older than we are now. They each have their own perspective, and it is a fragmentary perspective. They don't have the perspective of wholeness. So part of the skill building is learning, once you've, you know, cleared your boundaries, I mean, cleared your own space and established your boundaries and brought your soul's presence into yourself. That's your wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
But then being able to sit in your wholeness and be in relationship with each of these inner selves, the one that says, no, 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 are you crazy? Why do you think this is a good idea? This is a terrible idea. And the self that says, ah, don't listen to her. Let's go. Let's just do this. So you're the mediator between all of these inner selves, because your perspective is the perspective of wholeness.
Uh-huh.
And from that perspective of wholeness, you can help each one of these aspects of yourselves feel heard mm-hmm. and understood, truly listen to what her needs are and what it is that she wants, and what it is that she believes, and then you can help them release what they're carrying around of past experience or what they've heard or what they've been told or what they've projected, and ask them to show you what is at their heart, because at their heart, they are part of your soul's essence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then your work is to then restore that soul essence back to your wholeness. And when you do that, these seeming opposites are not opposites at all. They each mm-hmm. contribute aspects of soul to whatever project you're engaged in
mm-hmm.
without pulling in different directions. You know?
Right. And I think that's a really critical piece, and that's come up in our conversations too, that there has that the elements of trust mean that you are trusting all of what's speaking to and giving it space to listen. And
but you are exercising discernment.
Right, and that is discernment for sure.
Because if there's a self that's 5 years old and she's saying, this is too much, this is too much, this step that you're taking in your business is just too much, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's true for her, and you can trust her in the sense that you can trust her to tell you her truth.
Right.
But just as you wouldn't let a 5-year-old make decisions for your business,
mm-hmm.
you won't let this aspect of you make decisions for your mm-hmm. business either.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And right. that's discernment. That's where you,
yeah.
you recognize, oh yeah, this is a 5-year-old self uh-huh. with a 5-year-old's perspective.
So what would be some really, you know, practical beginners kinds of tools to or practices or however you wanted to find them to become more aware of those inner voices and to give them space and listen to them? What kinds of things do you suggest people do to be more self-aware in that way?
Well, I mean, you know, grounding and centering are absolutely key.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you are grounded, you are connected. You're connected with your soul. You're connected with the earth. You're connected with the whole ecology of your life. When you are centered, you know yourself as a singular being, as a sovereign being.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from that place of centeredness and groundedness that your soul's presence becomes the predominant force in your own energy field.
Mm-hmm.
And on a really simple level, you know, you can just take a moment right now and tune in and just get a sense of where your soul is in relationship to you.
Hmm.
You know, is it above you? Is it on one side? Is it way out in the back? Is it far away? Is it close by? And simply invite more of it into your body and do whatever you need to do to connect with it. So maybe you need to turn around to face it.
Well,
maybe you need to go up and embrace it. Whatever it is, you know, I mean, and we're talking about it as though it's separate from you, and of course it's not, because your body is also your soul incarnate.
Right.
But your extended soul expands into many, many dimensions, way beyond your body. So the more that you can be in relationship with your soul, with your extended soul, the more power you have, the more presence you have.
Mm-hmm. But
and from that place.
Wouldn't you say that we have created a great deal of barriers that do try to separate it from us? When I think of the noise that we invite into our lives, the busyness, the not finding time for stillness, and feeling that we need to have some guilt over our self-care or things, aren't those the kinds of things that you would say contribute to the separateness?
Absolutely. I had a friend of mine was here for dinner the other night, and she said something really interesting. She said, you know, my mom always told me that if in any given situation you are feeling guilt on the one hand and resentment on the other about a choice that you have to make,
mm-hmm.
choose guilt, because it always means that you're taking care of yourself. Which I thought was quite brilliant. But, yeah,
uh-huh.
it's important to recognize, this is part of discernment, is recognizing what is culturally conditioned.
Right.
And what is not. So be curious.
Yeah.
You know, when you have this voice that says, you can't do that,
mm-hmm.
who do you think you are? That's mm-hmm. totally self-indulgent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're just going to experiment here. Going to experiment to see what happens if I have a massage every day for 3 weeks. You know, we're not going to label it until all the evidence is in.
Right.
And we'll see what effect that has on my life, on my business, on my relationships.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
What do I discover about who I am when I let myself have exactly what I want?
Nice.
Who am I?
Mm-hmm.
I have exactly what I want. And that, you know, it's having that, really that fundamental attitude of exploration.
Right. I love that. That's so beautiful. And I think that's really at the heart of what this whole course is about, learning to lead with your wild heart, is just exploring what that wildness is in yourself and in the world around you. And I'm going to need to draw this to a close. This is such a beautiful conversation, and I've been just sitting here feeling so peaceful and smiling as you talk, because it just fills me with great delight. I do want to ask you, though, what you say to people. A woman, a client comes to you and she says, Hero, I did all those things you told me. I trusted my intuition. I followed it. I cared for myself, and I didn't listen to Aunt Mabel's voice, and I went ahead with it. And then I failed miserably, and I've made a fool of myself, and my business is now a failure. What do you then speak into their lives?
Oh, sweetie, it has never happened in 40 years of
no.
life. It has never happened.
Hmm.
If they're truly following their intuition, it's not going to happen. But I would tell a story. I mean, it happens in small ways. It doesn't happen. My business is a failure and everything is a disaster. When I was 9 years old, my class in school was going that summer on a 10-day sort of field trip to the Ajanta and Ellora caves, where these cave temples in India. And I was a really shy child, and for me, this was a big thing, you know. I was very excited about it, and I took all the stuff home, and my dad read through it, and he said, no, I'm sorry. Oh, they were going in October. We had, being India, there were holidays all over the year. We had 3 weeks in October. They were going over the October holidays. And he said, no. I can't remember why he said no. And I remember being absolutely devastated, you know, feeling like I had such a strong pull to go to this thing, and why couldn't I go? And I remember crying in my bed and just knowing really deep inside me, it's this clear voice, there is something else for you. There is something else for you. And as it turned out, at the same time that my class went on this trip, I ended up going to Japan as the UNESCO Child Ambassador for a month on the trip of a lifetime. I had entered an international essay contest like months before that, so I'd forgotten all about it. And then, you know, between the time that this paperwork for the school trip had to be signed and October, I had been shortlisted and called in for interviews, and then I won. And off I went, and I realized, oh, my soul and the sacred know so much more. There's a much vaster landscape of which they are conscious than I am. So if there, I mean, for me, if something isn't working, the first thing that I will do is check internally to see where I am out of alignment with my soul's purposes. You know, if it's not part of the flow of my soul, and if it's not part of the flow of my incarnation, it doesn't matter how hard I try, it's not going to happen. So I need first to check to see if I'm aligned with that. And if I am, and it still hasn't happened, then I know it's because there's something else that is yet to unfold. And then I just let it go. I just surrender to that, and off we go. And that's what I would say.
Right. And that's been that we've spent a lot of time in this course. The last few weeks, people got really, we did a session 3 weeks ago on surrender. And that's been the concept that we've had most conversation about, because it's been really resonating and really challenging people, but also really, really an important part of the journey. And so I'm glad you brought that up.
The reason people have so much trouble with surrender is because so often they have surrendered their sovereignty to somebody else.
Right.
You know? And surrender is always surrender to the sacred.
Right.
It is never surrender to another person or an ideology or anything outside of yourself.
Thank you so much, Hiro. It's been so lovely to talk to you, and I feel so blessed to be able to do this program, because I'm of course learning as much, if not more, than my students. In closing, what final words would you offer to this beautiful circle of women?
Explore all of who you are. You are an incarnate soul. You are not your body, you are not your thoughts, you are not your feelings, you are not your beliefs, you are not your inner self, you are not what you do, although all of these are aspects of you. You are the wholeness that embraces all of that, and that is a living reality. Make that the center of your life, and your everything in your world will change.
Thank you.
Thank you, Heather.
Blessings to you.
And to you too. Bye-bye.